It's showtime.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this seventh day of June, 2022. This is The Horn. This program is live. It's late, but it's live. You can find us at headon.live. Sorry, I'm just, it's been a day. Now, you can find us at headon.live. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. In the 3 hours, this program is live Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. Hi, I'm Robin. It's Titanic Tuesday, a day for taking note of the Titanic intellect of the right wing. Yeah. Jesus, God. So, I started having computer problems last night, and, what happened was, the best I can guess, actually, is that, the streaming computer, which has been, I frankly think it's nearing the end of its useful life, to get as long out of a computer as we've gotten out of the fab machine is pretty fab in the first place, but it got brutally hot in here last night. I mean, it really, really did. It was approaching 95 degrees by the time the program was over, and I'm working on getting the air conditioner installed. It's just, you know, everything has a condition precedent that has to be dealt with, and the condition precedents have condition precedents, and it's like that, it's like the chicken hawk in the Warner Brothers cartoon. The cat told me where to get a fish if I'll bring him a mouse, and the mouse said he'll get tell me how to get a fish if I bring him some cheese. I wonder what the cheese is gonna want. Yeah, that's kind of me. So it overheated. I've shut it down, let it cool off overnight, started futzing around with it this morning, finally got everything squared away, came up to broadcast time, and out of nowhere, Chantel decided to crash like a paralyzed falcon, or hawk. And so the Chantel's internet corkscrewed into the dirt. And it occurred to me that this is what I get for making fun of the production values of the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells. I'm talking, of course, about racist Bannon and the profile we discussed of him in the program yesterday. The Atlantic Magazine profile of him. Still don't know. Well, I mean, I still don't know why they'd want, but they did. So, you know, that's way above my pay grade. But there's a passage in there that talks about how he has clicks and pops and sounds like he's under the water and the phone sounds like it's bubbling. The phone calls sound like they're bubbling through, I don't know, maybe his, triple martini or whatever. And I had some fun with it. An incel drawn by Maurice Sendak. That was a beautiful moment in the article. And then this. So that's why it took a half an hour to get the program on the air, because, you know, the internet didn't just, you know, I was using it earlier today. And then right there, the program was good, and I had everything ready to go with the streaming interfaces, and it died. So, I mean, really, Goddess of Irony? Was that necessary? And I'm sorry it took so long to get the Friday on the Front Porch podcast up, but I had to transfer that from the laptop to the production PC, and I went to do that last night, and that's when the computer overheated and refused. I mean, the mouse wasn't mousing, and then the keyboard wasn't keyboarding, and screens were locked up, and but everything did eventually get squared away, so here we are. Yay. And, did I say May? 7th day of June, 2022. You're confusing me, Scott. But anyway, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So we send out our thanks at the beginning of the program to our seventh day of the month PayPal subscribers. That means thank you to James. Thank you, James, very kindly. Thank you to Matt in San Francisco. Thank you most kindly for the challenge yesterday, Matt. And so the fundraising goal is, it stands at $780. And that's what we need to do to get, you know, to stay even. And it would be really helpful if we could take a substantial bite out of that, because there are critically important bills that affect the ability to this program to be on the air that are waiting. And, okay. Oh, I understand now, Scott. Thank you. But if you want to help out, there's a PayPal button at headon.live. And there's also Venmo and, of course, the venerable U.S. Postal Service box at the UPS store. That's, of course, the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. All right, so we've gotten most of the housekeeping taken care of. Let's now, what are you talking about, Scott? Yikes, whipsawed like an MF-er today from May to June in just minutes. Somebody hand me an aspirin and a cold compress, P.S., and an ice-cold vodka martini might help, too. I understand. So there was a May show playing, and then the live show kicked in, and that was what the whipsaw was about. I got it. Lady B says, this is one of the dumbest, most sociopathic things I've read today. Look at the subtitle of a headline from The Guardian. Gun crime victims are holding the firearms industry accountable by taking them to court. Following the strategy used in legal actions against cigarette and opioid firms, the lawsuits attempt to sidestep a law shielding gun makers. Okay, Lady B writes, you know the lyrics from Already Gone by the Eagles, the part where Glenn Frey sings, the letter that you wrote me made me stop and wonder why? That's exactly what I did when I saw that story, dudette. There's a law protecting gun manufacturers from lawsuits? Why, yes, there is. Why is that, you think? Why would they need protection from anything? Isn't that what they market and sell? Well, it is, but back in the early part of this century, Lady B, a whole bunch of senators got together and pulled together 60 votes and said, let's make the gun industry immune from lawsuits when their weapons are used improperly to, oh, I don't know, slaughter people. I imagine, well, I'm sure every Republican voted in favor of it, but you couldn't get to 60 without some Democrats or maybe some independents. By that, I mean, you know, he represents an extremely rural Appalachian state. Yes, I realize it's New England, but it's still Appalachia. So, yes, Bernie Sanders voted in favor of giving immunity to gun manufacturers, immunity from suit. Having editorialized on Lady B continues 3, 2, 1. It'd be funny if it wasn't both enigmatic and tragic. We have laws shielding makers of devices exclusively designed to kill animals and human beings from any type of lawsuit. Because these handful of companies who make devices designed exclusively to kill animals and human beings somehow need protection from families who wish to sue them for their complete irresponsibility in marketing and selling this shit to underage and or unstable beings. You know that UL tag on extension cords in Underwriters Laboratory? That's required by law and by OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, to make sure that by doing the simple act of plugging the cord into a socket, the user won't be electrocuted. The tags are mandatory. Most people don't even think about it. They don't have to, and that's exactly how it should be. Well, think about the tag on your mattress. I think those are still there, aren't they? Extension cords, Lady B notes, are useful and practical, yet at one time they were dangerous. I'm old enough to remember how dangerous they were. I was a little girl, but I remember only Daddy could use extension cords. Now, as an adult living in an older house, I use them a lot. We do, too. I see the tag, and I buy it, knowing it's safe. Their use is ubiquitous in any society. We shouldn't have to worry about how safe they are and their effectiveness. Well, guns don't come with warning tags. The warning is implied, but a lot of people still don't get it. With guns, the warning isn't inherent as to the weapon itself. The warning rests with the user. You know, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. Sure, you don't plug in an extension cord with wet hands or if the wires are exposed. However, the tag warns you of that, and I guess it'd seem out of place to have to put a tag on a gun. But if you don't know that, you could actually harm yourself or someone else. Maybe that should be the case, don't you think? And, of course, by way of affirming and validating what Lady B says here, back in 1971, my brother, either he or someone else, accidentally blew his brains all over a basement living room because he had in his hand a Ruger semi-automatic .22 caliber pistol, which was capable of firing with the magazine out, but a round in the chamber. And the magazine was out, but there was a round in the chamber, and gun go boom, Kenny go dead. So I know a little bit about losses due to gun violence. It's very complicated, that particular case, but we won't go into that. And they still make guns like that, that will fire with a... And supposedly they're mainly marketed for, like, off-duty guns for cops. Yeah, we got a cop story here later on this Titanic Tuesday. But they still make guns. But then they do tell you that it actually does come with a warning, because Browning got the living bejesus sued out of them in the 1970s because they did fail to warn that the thing would fire with one in the pipe and magazine out. And those lawsuits were part of what drove the impulse in the early aughts to give the poor darlings of the gun industry a free pass on manufacturing deadly and negligently designed products. Um, Lady B continues and says, of course, warning tags on guns would be removed. It'd be like pulling the tags off that cute sundress you want to wear, or in a more ominous way, removing the tag from your mattress. I knew she'd get to the mattress. And it's silly to even think we'd have to put UL-type tags on something so obviously dangerous to own. After all, the user should know they can kill someone with it. But how else do you warn the public of just how dangerous owning something exclusively designed to kill animals or people is? True, and I once worked on a case of a... It was a products liability case, and it was industrial in nature. But it was a huge crane that was used on a mountaintop removal site. And this was back in the early 90s. Big old strip job. And they had to... The humongous, god-awful machine that they used to just claw away hunks of a mountain. Well, it had a belt on it that moved the removed the extracted material, and they had to stop every so often to do maintenance. And the foreman in charge of the job of doing the maintenance on it, well, they had a humongous crane that they used to do this particular job. It was made by a company called P&H Harnischfeger, if I recall correctly, of somewhere in Wisconsin, maybe. And the crane had a humongous, just a giant, gigantic boom. And then there was what was called a jib tip. And it would rig to the end of the boom to give a little bit more height and a little bit more of an out angle to the crane. Well, the fellas on the mine site didn't realize that there were two sets of lugs by which one rigged to the crane. One of those sets of lugs was merely for transporting the crane on the truck. It went on a pair of bolts on the truck, and you secured it. And they couldn't quite reach the angle they needed in order to get the lifting cable down to move the belt so that the maintenance work could be done. So the fellas on the mine thought that maybe that second set of lugs was meant to provide a little greater angle to allow the crane to reach hard-to-reach places. So they rigged the crane to the transport lugs, hooked everything up. The foreman was standing below, and he gave the thumbs-up signal to lift the belt, and they lifted the belt, and the lugs gave way. It just snapped right off, and the whole jib-tip assembly just collapsed and crushed the mine foreman like a bug. Killed him deader than Pharaoh's cat. And that case went on, and the lawyer who tried it got a humongous verdict on what is called a theory of failure to warn. And his argument before the jury, and the jury agreed, he said a 50-cent plastic label would have saved the guy's life. Hey, this is a transport lug. It's not meant for lifting. Don't rig to these lugs. Somebody will die. And there was a humongous judgment, and it survived on appeal. And I would bet, I'm pretty sure there are warning labels now on those jib tip, if those things even exist anymore. So, yeah, I say all this by way of absolutely agreeing with Lady B, who says, mandate gun safety classes, mandate range training, mandate safes with biometric security. Make it so that if you want to buy a gun, unless you can prove you know how to use it, you have to take classes. Hell, even the pros should have to demonstrate gun safety right there in the shop. How to load and unload it, how to handle it, how to store it. Yeah. Back to the right to sue the makers of devices exclusively designed to kill animals and human beings. Gun manufacturers are just as irresponsible as the people they sell them to. And they're irresponsible because we don't hold them to account. If you bought an extension cord that frayed after using during a long day working with power tools, you'd take it back to the store or throw it away. If it shocked you when you plugged it in, or God forbid it electrocuted you, you or your family would sue the manufacturer and win. Because although most of us are aware of an extension cord's inherent dangers, no one expects anything more out of its use than for it to just fucking work properly. Guns and their usefulness is completely subjective. Completely. The millions of gun owners who are not police, security guards, or military have to continuously justify why they own them. Protection from harm is important to all of us. Needing to feel safe in and of itself is not subjective. But purchasing and owning a weapon that will disintegrate a child's organs into bits and pieces, be they innocent or guilty, is. Bad things have and will continue to happen in this world, but if your only justification for owning a semi or fully automatic weapon is because all the bad guys have them, or they're just plain fun to shoot, I have to question your true motives and your level of paranoia. So families and surviving victims of mass shootings cannot sue gun manufacturers or sellers should things go sideways. Their products are deadly in the wrong hands, yet they have no safety use labels. They have no instructions and no warnings. It's all implied, should be obvious, and in all cases, the fault rests squarely on the shoulders of the users. But maybe the users aren't truly aware of what damage the use of those weapons cause. Maybe a warning label with a pic of a badly mutilated body should come attached. You know, interestingly, Lady B, down in Oz, wherein reside a number of our friends, that was the approach that the Australian government took, who also had the common damn sense to, you know, ban assault weapons after Port Arthur. They got tired of watching Australians die of cancer from smoking, and so they forbade logos. And they forbade colorful cigarette packaging, and they required pictures of the after effects of things like mouth cancer to be displayed with the tobacco products. I used to be into Cuban cigars, and I would occasionally order a box through an outfit in Australia, and it would come from Australia marked with a big picture plastered across the cigar box of somebody's face who had been eaten away by mouth cancer. It was sobering. I no longer smoke Cuban cigars. I no longer smoke cigarettes. I no longer smoke. And I like it. It's tough getting here, but I like it. Every once in a while, never mind. I'm digressing all over Lady B's wonderful essay. But yeah. A big old photo of one of the kids from Uvalde should be on the on every AR-15 box. Lady B says if it's ignored, that's to be expected. You bought a gun and the seller's not your mama. But honestly, if folks feel they need to own semi-automatic weapons, I'm not sure we're dealing with the most stable, much less pacifist of minds. And as for those who think shooting these types of weapons at a range is just fun, they need to constantly be reminded of their immense power. I believe they truly think they know this. They get wet or rock hard about this. It's a powerful feeling. Well, that's why we refer to firearms as, blue steel penis extensions. Although in the case of, like Clanny Oakley, Lauren Bobblehead Bobert, or Marginal Trailer Queen, Blue Steel Dildos. Remember, the iconic band Steely Dan took their name from a reference in Naked Lunch by William S. Burroughs, and Steely Dan in William S. Burroughs' Naked Lunch was, in fact, a humongous stainless steel dildo. Not saying. Just saying. But they, Lady B continues, they think they know how truly deadly and life-altering these weapons are, but they really don't, because if they did, they wouldn't want to own something like that. Most of them have never shot another human being. Birds and animals aside, they don't know the damage of a semi or fully automatic weapon and what it does to a human body. Show them pictures. Make sure the pics are of kids for maximum effect. You know, the way the anti-abortion goons, who are also largely, curiously, pro-gun assholes, make sure the pics are kids for maximum effect. That way they won't be able to compartmentalize and label the victims as bad guys. In Europe, some countries used to put pictures of what lung damage looked like on their cigarette packs. It was disgusting and traumatic, and honestly, I don't know how many smokers even cared. If you have a crippling habit, it didn't matter anyway. You compartmentalize and light up, but the more subtle effects of on the populace was bigger. This is what smoking does to your lungs. We're not hiding it, and it can't be denied or ignored. The onus is on you now. Smoke at your own risk. Some actually took it to heart. If we can't be rid of semi-automatic and automatic weapons, then we need to regulate them. Mandatory gun safety classes, mandatory practice on a range, and a day-long class showing pictures, video, and testimony from survivors and their loved ones. Show them everything from the accidental to suicides. Tell them guns are serious, serious business, and to own one will leave them with a heavy responsibility. Not only can you hurt yourself, the odds of you hurting someone else or a family member hurting themselves has just become multifold. Guns are designed to kill animals and human beings, vermin or animals. Chasing them away means firing and possibly killing them. That's neither here nor there. But if your reason for gun ownership is strictly about protection, then that should disavow any bullshit argument as to what their specific purpose is. Guns are designed to kill vermin, animals, and human beings. That's their sole purpose. So if you need a tag on them to remind you of that, if I had the power, I'd happily oblige. Guns are strictly, exclusively designed to kill animals and human beings. Owning a gun, particularly a semi or fully automatic one, even if it's for protection, implies that you're willing to kill a person, even over the pettiest of crimes, particularly if you get your hackles up. Research, quote, research now shows that far more frequently perpetrators share one common thread in mass shootings, in gun homicide, and particularly in much more common gun deaths. The killer is frequently, until that moment, a law-abiding firearm owner pulling the trigger on a lawfully held gun. And that is why I say that the only difference between a lawful gun owner and an awful gun owner is the letter L and the distance it takes to move the trigger in order to engage the firing mechanism. Concluding, Lady B says, include suicide and domestic violence in that too. Once more, for the people in the back, guns are strictly exclusively designed to kill animals and human beings. You may not ever be sued for you or your weapon accidentally hurting or killing someone, but sometime soon you will be. The young ones are fed up with your open carry macho bullshit, your oops moments, oops, blam, pray, thank you, Joy in Ann Arbor, and your unstable family members. No more. Learn what guns are really for. Stop substituting knives or cars as potential weapons. They can be, but repeat after me. Guns are strictly, exclusively designed to kill animals and human beings. Be responsible, be proactive, and keep your shit locked up. And please advocate for stronger gun laws, otherwise the next supermarket or, God forbid, school shooting will involve you. Thank you, Lady B. And I appreciate you tolerating me editorializing interstitially among your profound words. Cigarette boxes, Lady B says, Robin, you're scaring me. I think the folks in Oz took it further than the countries that showed the bad lungs. I mean, bad lungs are inside you, and lots of things make for bad lungs, but, well, the hole in your mouth that cigar or that rub of snuff did, that's another matter entirely. And interestingly, Lady B has a way of almost anticipating where I'm going with the program. You wouldn't happen to be any good at lottery numbers, would you, Lady B? I could use some help because. By the way, Matt in San Francisco said, digging the start. I'm liking the new Matrix start today's program. I think I took the red pill. Party on, Garth. Party on, Matt. Party on, Wayne. the whipsaw matrix start. Yeah. And that's him, Ralphs, Henry Harnischfager, Pine Lake. And Ralphs notes, the lake where I grew up. Was that the lake you showed me a picture of? Yeah. And you know, to engineers and the like, they're like, well, you'd never rig to the, those are for transport. What kind of idiot? Oh. And that's the problem. You have to take the idiots into account. And the crazies. Because most of the problems are not, they're not caused by folks who are rationally into detail. That's why negligence is defined as negligence is defined. To do or not do that thing which, in the same or similar circumstances, a reasonably prudent person would do or not do. I know that sounds kind of messy, but when you take a moment and you sort of unpack it, it makes sense. And, of course, the reasonably prudent person has been referred to as that problem child of the law. Because trying to sort out what the reasonably prudent person is, well, highfalutin law professors spend sleepless nights scratching their heads and rubbing their leather elbow patches of their corduroy sport coats on their thighs as they do that whole, you know, the thinker thing. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I neglected to mention, if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany, etc., wander on by the chat room. We got a great group in there this evening. Anatole's there, Earther's there, Kim's there, Natural's there, Roger and Oregon's there, Squeaky, Theo. Good group. Glad to see you. Oh, that is, okay. So, Pine Lake, I saw a picture of it. Ralph showed me at the Horn Inn. How cool. And, by the way, both the Friday on the Front Porch podcast and yesterday's podcast are up now, unless something went sideways. I checked them, and they appear to be fully functional. This program as well, I hope, because it's not quite so brutally hot in here today. But I said that we had some overlap, and well, Agence France-Presse reporting today that the American disease has once again metastasized, this time in central Mexico. It took place in Guanajuato state. Cesar Prieto, the mayor of Barón, said, unfortunately, we can say that a few hours ago in the Barón community, six people lost their lives in an armed attack. People with guns slaughtered five high school students and a 65-year-old woman who just happened to be standing nearby. This, of course, is related to gang violence, apparently. 2 weeks ago, eight women and three men were murdered in a revenge attack on a pair of bars in a hotel in Celaya, another city in Guanajuato. Gosh, I wonder who made the guns. And I wonder, you know, authorities have blamed, according to AFP, authorities have blamed most of the killings on organized crime. And you know, they would have done it with that. And then, well, they would have done it with assegais or katanas if they didn't have the guns. Sure. But a a committee, a congressional committee, took testimony. In the Senate over gun violence, and in particular gun violence as it relates to Buffalo. Senator Mazie Hirono was questioning Professor Robert Pape of the University of Chicago. Dr. Pape is an expert on extremism. And during her questioning, well, Dr. Pape, what he had to say took a decidedly grim turn.
So based on the relative unanimity of acknowledging that easy access to guns in our country really contributes to these kinds of horrific shootings, that we should do something about to provide limiting who can get guns and limiting access to guns. Professor Pape, you mentioned that you noted in your testimony that violent populism is rising in our country. Do you think that this trend is going to change anytime soon? And if not, why not? If so, why?
If we don't do anything, if nothing changes, I'm worried that, yes, it's going to continue into the future. A point about guns, ma'am, if I may. We are now in the worst of both worlds. We are pushing gun legislation that will almost surely not pass. That's just my view as a political scientist. But what it's doing, and this is according to our data on our nationally representative.
Now, that's grim enough. We're pushing gun legislation that he, as a political scientist, feels confident in saying won't pass. This man is far more educated on issues of extremism and how politics works than the vast majority of us. But even we, lacking his expertise, also know that nothing's going to happen because Moscow Mitch McConnell lets any bill relating to gun violence and precious, God-blessed, delicate and dainty guns languish in a pool of blood and dust on his desk. That's grim enough, but what he's about to say is even more chilling.
Guns, ma'am, if I may. We are now in the worst of both worlds. We are pushing gun legislation that will almost surely not pass. That's just my view as a political scientist. But what it's doing, and this is according to our data on our nationally representative surveys, is that it is making those individuals who would have the violent sentiments even more concerned and more dangerous. So we need to be aware that it is not a free move to simply call for legislation on guns that goes nowhere, because there are many people in those 18 million that I point out who are already concerned the federal government is coming for their rights. So if we push legislation which goes nowhere, what we're doing is inflaming the problem more than we're solving it. Very important to see that's inside of our data. If we go forward and look at the next several years, the system, as I was just explaining to the other senator, we have a system now where once these dangerous ideas are in the mainstream, there are incentives for mainstream media figures and mainstream politicians to propagate them even more. And those incentives are not exactly they want violence as much as there are benefits. And we've seen this in other countries, in India, Northern Ireland, where politicians and media figures push dangerous ideas to gain votes or to gain media popularity, and they accept or they don't notice or they don't understand that it's also creating violence as a byproduct. That's what's dangerous about the next few years. As we go forward, we have created a system now where these ideas are in the mainstream. Mm-hmm. They're no longer in the fringe, and there are incentives for both political leaders and media figures to continue to propagate those dangerous ideas.
I agree with you, Professor, that this is a complicated situation. On the other hand, if we, I realize there are a lot of attitudinal cultural things that are going on in our country that leads to the kind of violence we see. On the other hand, if we do not enact some kind of legislation, for example, Hawaii has some of the strictest gun safety laws, and note that Hawaii has the lowest incidence of gun violence of any other state. There is a cause and effect going on here. So if we propose legislation, I agree with you that if we don't enact gun safety legislation, that just, I would say, tends to exacerbate the situation. But what if we actually passed some of these laws? I think it would be a big help, don't you?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Like I said, that's kind of chilling. It's become, what, a feedback loop? If you even dare to talk about gun violence, that the paranoid, pasty-faced, doughy white people and the young, disaffected white boys become even more radicalized. Of course, Dr. Pape is an expert in extremism in this country and in other countries, I suppose. And unsaid in there was the fact that he was testifying in a body that has at least 50 extremists in it. And I don't care if you want to talk about Lisa Murkowski or Susan Collins of Maine. I had an opportunity at the Horn Inn to have a brief chat with Ralph's sister Susie, and I said, you know, we talk a lot, and I said, you're in West Virginia, and this, you know who our senior senator is? And she said, oh, my God, Joe Manchin. And I said, but up in Maine, you've got to be sitting around scratching your heads a little bit about Susan Collins. And she said, oh, yeah, we do. She's awful. We're trying to get shed of her. And then she observed trenchantly, but she's a Republican, and we know she's going to do Republican things. Somehow it feels like more of a betrayal for you, because Joe Manchin is ostensibly a Democrat, and he, too, does Republican things. And, of course, by extension, you can say the same thing about Kyrsten Sinema. It's funny, I was out and about, and I've got a pair of glasses that I wear when I drive because astigmatic, and they've got a kind of a cat eye shape to it, and you check your rear view mirror, and I just happened to note while I was wearing it, oh my God, those look like Kyrsten Sinema glasses. So I guess when I can afford it, I'm going to go eyeglass shopping. Jesus Christ. No, never mind. But the fact of the matter is, what Dr. Pape was talking about is that, or at least what I took away from what he said, we're in the worst of both worlds, pushing gun legislation that won't last, and in the meantime, it further radicalizes people who are open to being radicalized because of their obsession with their rights. I take issue to a certain extent with what Dr. Pape said, though, in that DC versus Heller, fat dead Tony Scalia, even that opinion written by that fat dead man, says that reasonable limitations are perfectly constitutional. And if I understand him correctly, it's the try and fail aspect that does the radicalizing. Do I have that right? It is making those individuals who would have the violent sentiments even more concerned and more dangerous. If we push legislation which goes nowhere, what we are doing is inflaming the problem more than we're solving it. Because if you try and you fail, then the massively funded, you know, by the gun manufacturers, gun rights industry, points to the failed legislation as some sort of proof that they were coming for your guns. I mean, I remember seeing the same sort of thing happen, the same phenomenon, relative to, remember the cap and trade bill? You might recall the cap and trade bill as being something that Joe Manchin pinned to a tree in November of, Jesus, what was it, 2014? And shot with a .30-06. He murdered the cap and trade bill. I killed it. I done killed it, he said in the ad. I remember the horror that just suffused me watching his irresponsible use of a firearm for political gain. I done killed the cap and trade. But the thing is, even after cap and trade was killed, the fiends of coal and the West Virginia Coal Association and their various lobbying arms hammered away at a bill that most people knew nothing about. Most people knew nothing, for instance, of the fact that the cap and trade bill contained billions of dollars in corporate welfare for the coal industry to just line their pockets and work on carbon capture and sequestration, which has been proven time after time after time after time not to work. So in that regard, I think Dr. Pape's words are well taken. But he missed, he skipped a step, and that is the people who weaponize the failures. The other thing that goes with this is the question of what is the material difference in making it illegal for an 18-year-old to buy an AR-15 and making it legal for a 21-year-old to buy an AR-15? I don't think there is going to be that much brain development in 3 years such that the Ramoses of the world, who have been radicalized by places like 4chan, are going to get off 4chan in the 3 years that pass between 18 and 21. In Ramos's case, I'm guessing he probably just would have been saving enough money to buy, I don't know, a third fucking gun. The problem is the AR-15, the assault weapon, the magazines, the capacities, and the sunset provisions. You know, Australia didn't sunset their assault weapons ban after Port Arthur. They didn't say, well, you know what, we're going to make the sale of assault weapons illegal for 10 years, and then afterward, if haven't had any more of those sorts of slaughters, hey, we'll let the law sunset and let people buy AR-15s some more. No, they're not going to be legal here. And contrary to the opinion of the National Ruble Association and the various barking and grunting and hooting, pasty-faced, doughy old paranoid white men who stroke their rifles instead of their long dead dicks, Australia still has freedom. Lats and lats of freedom. Been a while since we've heard from Crocodile Kincaid. Hope you enjoyed it, Ron. Why the hell did we do that? I mean, we had an assault weapons ban that gave us enough time to develop, you know, empirically derived data that showed that when you ban assault weapon deaths dropped precipitously. Well, okay. See, we proved it. And now the assault weapons deaths are down. So what we need to do is just let the law sunset, and we'll start selling assault weapons again now that people ain't killing people with near as many assault weapons no more. Stupid, 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 stupid. But he is right, Pape was, in saying that members of the so-called mainstream media, the only way I can understand that is to say Fox and politicians, and the only way I understand that is to say Republicans, benefit from our sick and twisted approach to to firearms. But it is Titanic Tuesday, and this is a blast from your past. People like Scott will remember this. I remember being a kid toddling around with my dad behind the wheel. And occasionally, you know, you'd run across the rusted out old pickup truck with the front bumper tag showing the old Confederate soldier with his Confederate battle flag over his shoulder, and it said, and the caption, the thought of the speech bubble said, "Forget hail." But the other thing that I saw a lot of was a very plain bumper sticker, you know, white. Plastic, paper, whatever it was back then. My dad hated bumper stickers back then because, you know, once you put them on, you could never get them completely off, and because they weren't made of, well, they weren't like they are now. And the bumper sticker was white with big black block letters, and all it said was, "Get us out of the UN." And we're talking about 1968, 1969, the little things that make an impression on the minds of an impressionable little kid. And a lot of that was derived from, well, mainstream Republican politics for one, but also from the John Birch Society and that lot. Well, everything old is new again. And I mentioned my youth growing up in Alabama for a reason. Here we are, 2022. The United Nations is 74 years old, having first convened in San Francisco and then moved to a permanent home in New York. And Mike Rogers, he's a pig licking from Talabama, and he sits on the House Armed Services Committee. And lo and behold, he has introduced a bill, because you got to introduce all these bills because you got to keep the rubes worked up, and some things work on some rubes, and other things work on other rubes. So Mike Rogers of Talabama introduced, he sits on the House Armed Services Committee, and he introduced the American Sovereignty Restoration Act of 2022. Let me say that without the funny, stupid accent. The American Sovereignty Restoration Act of 2022. In order to restore a thing, the thing must first be already gone. So, in offering this bill, this numbnuts, pasty-faced, doughy old white dude bro from Talabama is saying that the United States is no longer a sovereign nation. Gee, I don't know. Maybe ask Mike Rogers of Talabama if maybe that when he thinks that we stopped being sovereign. Was it 1948 when we convened the United Nations? Or I don't know, Mike Rogers. Maybe it was 1865 when the Confederacy had to show its final flag, you know, the one that was just plain white. Interviewed on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, Mike Rogers said, "The Charter of the New 90 Nations states the UN's mission is to reaffirm faith in fundamental human rights, in the dignity and worth of the human person, in the equal rights of men and women, and of nations, large and small. It's clear the UN has abandoned the ideals set in its founding charter, and that's why, among many other reasons, I've reintroduced legislation to withdraw the United States from the UN." He's been doing this since 2015. And you may rest assured that if, as the for-profit media keeps telling us, the Republicans retake the House in November of this year, you know, because the disappointed, little heartbroken Democrats are going to stay home because they haven't gotten their fucking pony yet. He'll introduce the bill in 2023. It will receive a full committee hearing, and it will go to the floor for a fucking vote. And so, you know, make no mistake, Mike Rogers doesn't give a good goddamn about Uyghurs in China or anybody else who's, you know, not white. But he's flogging the Uyghurs as a tool to get us out of the UN. Now, what is going on in China is a human rights disaster. It is sickening. And it's also a classic example of the truth espoused in the Melian dialogues that great nations do as they wish and small nations do as they must. Nobody can make China. Nobody can make China quit abusing the hell out of the Uyghur minority. And what we mean when we say abusing the Uyghur minority is that there are something around 3 million Uyghurs in China who are in concentration camps. They are there for re-education to try to keep Islamic extremism from spreading in China. And it has earned global condemnation. But again, remember, capitalism, we condemn with one side of our mouth or condemn with one hand and cash the checks that are made on Chinese slave labor with the other. Now, there was a bill last December that actually passed the Congress called the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. It actually prohibits goods made in Xinjiang region from being imported, because the Xinjiang region is where much of the forced labor is taking place. Yeah, but, of course, Mike Rogers of Talibama is not just upset with China over the Uyghurs. Again, noting he really couldn't care less about the Uyghurs. He's not white, or not white enough to suit him. He's also, his bill, Sovereignty Restoration Act. We ain't sovereign no more. You know what? That just bothers me. It incenses me that we ain't got no sovereignty anymore. We can't even print our own money. Right. No, he also wants to withdraw the United States from the World Health Organization because the World Health Organization put public health second to the Chinese Communist Party because they covered up the origins of COVID-19. We believe that the jarring and public capitulations to the CCP by the UN and the WHO in the... Oh, Pete Townsend, Roger Daltrey, how could you? By the WHO in the past 2 years will bring a renewed interest in Representative Rogers' bill. That's what one of Rogers' aides done told Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Bad ideas are not only pernicious, they seem to have some staying power. The cover up the origins of COVID-19. That's the old made in the lab canard, which, well, not to put too fine a point on it, simply isn't true. Oh, well. So much for that. Like I said, it won't go anywhere for now. But if Democrats stay home and pout, oh, it'll go somewhere. It'll go somewhere. Have all kinds of legs. Yeah. And over at HuffPost, a guy named Ron Dicker, we talked about Mark Robinson, the lieutenant governor of North Carolina. Ron mentioned him in a note. Yesterday, WRAL reported on a speech that he gave in another church in the Charlotte area, in which he said, "We are called to be led by men. God sent women out when they had to do their thing, but when it was time to face down Goliath, he sent David, not Davida, David. By the same token, God picked Moses to lead the Israelites out of Israel, not Mama Moses, Daddy Moses. My God tells me that when I face adversity, that number one, I am to stand up like a man, M-A-N. Y'all can't be listening to the doctrine of social justice instead of listening to the doctrine of Jesus Christ." Guess Mark Robinson, who claims to be a preacher, never got around to reading about the women who formed a propellant core of the nascent Jesus cult. Mary Magdalene, who may have actually been a woman of means and wealth, and not the whore that the Roman Catholic Church decided that she was. Then there's always Priscilla, who was a big fan of Paul until, I don't know, until Paul's really misogynistic side started coming out. Yeah, this guy's a real Lulu, Mark Robinson. Running for governor. He previously has, among other things, attacked the LGBTQ community. We know that. But he's also one of those people who promulgated the idea that Michelle Obama is really a dude. You know, trans. The weaponization of gender. It's got real legs with this guy.
We are Troy and Penny.
Oh, stop. Yesterday we had the clip of him bragging about his AR-15s. Yeah, I'm guessing he couldn't find his dick with a pack of bloodthirsty prison hounds and a GPS. I don't know. Well, never mind.
And I'll have my tea with my pinky out.
Ho, ho, ho!
Seriously, guys, thank y'all for being here. And as always, very first thing we're going to do is we're going to thank our Lord Savior Jesus Christ. Now, I told the last service this, I'm going to tell you this. The reason why I do that, see, when you say, I'd like to thank my Lord Savior Jesus Christ, first thing you get, the boo birds come out to you. Oh, you're a Bible thumper.
Anybody noticing something about his voice?
Oh, you think you're perfect. Oh, like you've never done anything. Why in the world do you think I'm thanking Jesus Christ?
Woo! Jerry Beads! Jerry Beads!
I'm not thanking him because I've been perfect. If I was perfect, I wouldn't need to thank him.
Yeah, okay.
And sway the minds of the old. It's a phrase called social justice.
Here we go.
Social justice has weaved its way into everything, into education.
Woven, dumbass.
It's weaved its way into education in the highest levels, the lowest levels, and in the middle. Social justice has weaved its way into entertainment, even into athletics. And here's the most devastating part. It has weaved its way into the church. I said this in the first service.
Yeah, I hate to break it to this dumb motherfucker, but social justice is kind of the beating heart of actual Christianity. I guess somebody must have pulled Matthew 25 out of Mark Robinson's gospel. Yeah, we'll save this the rest of this dumbass for tomorrow. Man, M-A-N. Yeah. Another anti-trans sports bill has gone into effect in Louisianistan, where they passed the damn thing, even though there is no indication whatsoever that there's an issue. Louisianistan, however, was behind the curve because they didn't put language in their bill making sure that every girl wanting to play sports had to subject themselves to a sexual assault. And Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards said it was a solution in search of a problem that doesn't exist. But the bill sat on his desk for
10 days, and he didn't veto it or sign it into law, so it became law without his signature. Probably because if he'd vetoed it, the Louisiana legislature would have simply overridden the veto, and that would have cost the people of Louisiana stand more money for a special session or some such. And, you know, that kind of, you know, trans kids aren't worth that kind of money. Or maybe he's relying on the courts to enjoin it and let Louisiana stand spend the money that way. Yesterday, he said he'd gotten several similar bills and that his views on the bill haven't changed, that it's dumb and a solution in search of a problem. And he said he's been hit with them for several times over the last 2 years, and he said the bill was going to become law regardless of what I did. I've allowed that bill to become law without my signature, not because I thought the bill was good. Y'all knew my views on it haven't changed. In the year since that bill was first put on my desk, there still hasn't been a single instance in Louisiana of a trans girl participating in sports. Senate Bill 44 was going to become law whether or not I signed it or vetoed it. And I think it's unfortunate, but it's where we are. And I hope we can all get to a point soon where we realize that these young people are doing the very best that they can to survive. Well, shit, honey, that's the problem. Republicans don't want the little trans kids to survive. They want them to unalive themselves with belts around their necks in the fucking shower, Governor. And John Bel Edwards is a Democrat. Maybe this is why people stay home. He could have continued to fight. He could have made him pass it over his veto. But hell, it was going to happen anyway. Because trans kids' lives don't matter in a place like Louisiana Stan. They just don't matter. Well, let's go back down to Talabama, to a little burg by the name of Leesburg. They got him a Freedom Protector store down in Leesburg. It is called, curiously enough, Leesburg Guns. And that's up in the northeastern part of Alabama. The story originally appeared in the Sand Mountain Reporter and Moral Volcano. No, it's just the Sand Mountain Reporter. The gun store owner, a woman, put up a sign recently. It reads in all caps, and this is disgusting, this is nauseating. Jeannie Nichols put up a sign at her store, Leesburg Guns, in all caps that said, "Congratulations to George Floyd on 2 years of sobriety." And now, of course, she's pogo-sticked up onto the cross, pissing and moaning about how she's being called a racist, and people are threatening to shoot up the store. Oh, Jesus, really? That'd be kind of biblical, wouldn't it? Live by the sword, die by the sword, and all that sort of stuff. It's actually in the book, but not that they ever pay attention. Well, that's about swords, not guns. Jesus loved guns. disgusted people drop their rating on Yelp to 1 star. That'll be reset at the end of the month, I'm sure. And Nichols, meanwhile, Jeannie Nichols says, she put the sign up because Barack Obama disrespect. Really? Barack Obama? Thanks, Obama. Disrespectfully compared the death of Floyd to the killing of children at a Uvalde, Texas school. She said, it ticked me off good. But it has nothing to do with the fact that George Floyd was black. It has to do with the fact of what George Floyd did and that they're honoring him. The man doesn't need to be honored. My sign wasn't racist, even though they want to spin it that way. It had nothing to do with his color. It had to do with what kind of person he was. People seem to worship him. No, you dumbass twit. No one's worshiping George Floyd, but he was made a martyr by the cops, who knelt on his neck for 9.5 minutes as he begged for his life. And see, we're not like they are. Our side's not like they are. Their side murders physicians, bombs clinics, burns black churches. Our side leaves testy Yelp reviews. Yay, us. Yeah, social justice. Scott in San Diego says, guns, guns, guns. I lived a mile or two down the road from St. Francis Hospital when I lived in Tulsa. What follows is a comment I posted recently on Firesign Theater alum Philip Proctor's Facebook in response to his post about so many guns in America. In 1995, after the bombing of the federal building in OKC happened, President Clinton addressed a gathering of survivors, family members, or friends of the victims and the people of Oklahoma. He consoled them and talked about the mindset of those who perpetrated mass murder. I was so impressed by what he said that day, I wrote a letter to him to tell him so. At the time, I lived in Tulsa, so I rewrote what I'd said to the president into a letter to the editor of our local newspaper and one to another paper that was read throughout the state. My focus was on guns. Clinton had mentioned in his speech that some 300 million guns were in the hands of private citizens. So in my letters to the editors, I pointed out that members of the Michigan militia believed that the government was out to take away all those guns. I don't know what it is about the word guns that makes me say it, guns. Now, I wondered about how that might work. Armed only with a handheld calculator, I worked out how long such an effort, if there actually was one, would take. I determined that even if this unknown evil they put such a plan into effect at, say, 100 guns taken away a minute, it would take something like 95 years plus some months to do it. This presumed this they has set out to do it. The owners of the guns weren't shooting at them, and this they could find a place to park. Obviously, there was no such nefarious plan in 1995, and there isn't one now. All that rational people want done is to keep guns out of the hands of criminals, terrorists, and lunatics. It's still a rather modest proposal, but I'll need to rework the equation and timetable since there are now some 400 million guns. Damn, things reproduce like rabbits, don't they? I guess I'm going to need a bigger calculator, so I'll get back to you. P.S., and you had to figure there'd be a P.S. Not long after my letters to the editors appeared in the newspapers, I found on the front porch of my home a manila envelope. Inside was a collection of the most vile racist literature you could imagine from a local Nazi or KKK group. I suppose the folks who left it just wanted me to know they'd read my letters and didn't much care for my sentiments. At the time, a relative in D.C. worked for the Secret Service, so I called him to see if I should report what I'd received to local authorities or a federal agency. The sender had meant to unnerve me, and I was. My relative advised against it, telling me they were upset that my letters were published while their mad rants never were, so I left it at that. 27 years later, recalling this still gives me a cold chill. The beliefs and rhetoric of all the crazies out there has gotten crazier, and the cold chill is a lot colder. And pretty much constant. Scott adding, oh, come on, Robin. You know better. General Jack D. Ripper was right about the UN. All they want is for fluoride to be put in our drinking water and children's ice cream, Mandrake. Little children's ice cream. Oh, and the enslavement of humankind. Sure. Get us out of the UN! Arthur's paying attention. It's weavened, Robin, not weaved, woven. No, it's weavened. First cowbell of the evening goes to Arthur. What's all this talk about ice cream? Now I want some. Come on, Robin, ice cream's just as deadly as guns. You get one real good strong brain freeze and wham, aneurysm. People kill people, not Cherry Garcia, nor bazookas. Cherry Garcia. I guess I'd have to go across the river if I really had a hankering for Cherry Garcia. I'll make do with the Neapolitan ice cream sandwiches in the freezer. I've been into fruit bars lately. Oh, I found some watermelon fruit bars, and, you know, usually watermelon is... It's one of those flavors they have a really hard time duplicating or reproducing. Yeah, but I think it's the Outshine brand. And I took a flyer on a box of six watermelon fruit bars, and holy cow! It really is watermelon. And I had one on one of the blazing hot days that I was running around in the yard working on food for the Hornet. And, well, it was one of those Kurt Vonnegut moments, you know. If this isn't nice, I don't know what is. And by the way, you know, this is a conversation radio program. If you'd like to get involved in the conversation, you are more than welcome to do so. I'm still looking for the stress line phone. It's somewhere in the car. And hopefully I'll have it tomorrow. By tomorrow. But if you want to get into the program, Skype still works, and you can reach the program that way. We're coming up on the final hour of the program. Fundraising goal is $780. And we are at Goose Egg. And that is a little bit, well, frightening, to say the least. It would be great if we could reduce that, please. Yeah. Oh, how about a little bit of good news? You remember the story from a few months back when Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's nomination was under consideration? Well, back then, a Georgetown University law professor and dickhead by the name of Ilya Shapiro, who apparently came to Georgetown from the Cato Institute. Yeah. Well, at that point, back then, he wrote that Joe Biden was choosing a lesser black woman to sit on the Supreme Court. He said that Joe Biden was cowing to identity politics by keeping a campaign promise to nominate a woman of color to the Supreme Court, a black woman. Well, Ilya Shapiro stuck to his guns until he finally said, well, okay, I guess my comments about Ketanji Brown Jackson were inartful. Dude, it's not like it wasn't good art. It was bad racism. Well, like I said, it was a... good news story. Ilya Shapiro has quit after 4 months at Georgetown Law. Among other things, an auditorium at Georgetown was packed to busting with students demanding he exit that elite institution of higher learning. He wrote, "Dean William Treanor cleared me on the technicality that I wasn't an employee when I tweeted, but the findings implicitly repealed Georgetown's speech and expression policy and set me up for discipline the next time I transgress progressive orthodoxy." Whackada, 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 as he nails himself into the cross. "Instead of participating in that slow motion firing, I'm resigning. Georgetown Law is a place that doesn't value free speech." In the name of DEI. DEI? That would be the genitive singular of the Latin word for God, Deus Dei, of God, Dei. No. In the name of Dei, diversity, equity, and inclusion, it stifles intellectual diversity, undermines equal opportunity, and excludes dissenting voices. This is their mewling and puking cry now, when they get caught saying the quiet part out loud. What a schmuck. Well, he'll be fine. He's probably got enough money to burn a sopping wet herd of sopping wet wet elephants with sopping wet $100 bills. And maybe he'll move on to have a law talk program sponsored by the Cato Institute on, I don't know, Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, maybe? Does that sound plausible? Kind of does to me. Yeah, wait, what, says Scott? The Green Hornet's houseboy has opened an institute. You did not just say houseboy. You didn't write that, Scott. I know that was an unintentional error on your part. No, not that, Cato. We're talking about the ancient Republican Roman crank who participated in a revolt and civil war against Gaius Julius Caesar in the 50s and late 40s BCE. Well, thank you, Ralphs. Ralph says, "I'm contributing $10, and if somebody else contributes 10, I'll contribute another 10 bucks. And that would get us down to 750 bucks to go, if somebody's out there's got 10 bucks. Well, thank you, Scott. Scott kicked in 10. Scott knows how hard fundraising has become to keep in terms of trying to keep this little program on the air and keep disaster away from the lupine pest off the porch of the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. And thank you, Ralphs. Thank you. I've been reading a lot more right-wing content lately. And while it is not particularly good for my own mental health, it does it does at least show me where where the thin gray settlings that slosh around between the ears of Republicans and pass for brains are working now. The lengths to which a Republican will go to not talk about the obvious and simple solution to things like mass murders and slaughters of fourth graders in schools, it's kind of amazing to behold. They had a segment on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda recently in which some dude, actually the dude bro's name is former New York Police Department Detective Pat Brosnan, who has a truly genius way of, or should I say, super genius way of preventing school shootings. Get the hockey puck. Man, this is stupid.
That's what's needed. We need to install man traps. This is something we've discussed in the past, back in 2018. I checked. Man traps, a series of interlocking doors at the school entrance that are triggered by a tripwire. The tripwire can be a gunshot, broken glass, a manual switch tossed by a school employee, and it traps the shooter like a rat. And when he's trapped like a rat, we're buying time. The most precious commodity these children can ever get. It's time to run, time to hide, time to get away from this madman and his bullets. It's tripwires, it's man traps. It's not labor, it's not gun control.
So, just to be clear about this, we're gonna trap the shooter in a series of interlocking doors. I get the idea that maybe former Detective Brosnan might be playing a few too many of those puzzle-based video games. And like I said, Wile E. Coyote, super genius. I like the sound of that. So what's going to happen when they open the doors of the man trap to get to the guy who's got the guns? Oh, wait, no, I know what. They're going to go in on an Acme rocket sled, or maybe they'll float in a little disc of instant hole. At first, I thought he was going with some Caesarian warfare tactics, and he was going to dig holes in the yard around the school and put sharpened wooden stakes at the bottom of the hole, and or maybe tiger traps. And a whole lot simpler just to get rid of the goddamned assault weapons, but, well, you don't get to work at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda thinking things like that. And, of course, then there's the question of, it's an elementary school, maybe it's a kindergarten. And what happens when the wee little tyke accidentally triggers the man trap? Yeah, Randy Radar understands. And if you harden the schools, the shooters go after the hospitals. And if you harden the hospitals, they'll go after the transit systems. If you harden the transit systems, they'll go after the sports stadiums. And if you harden the sports stadiums, they'll go after the grocery stores. Carl Sandberg. We raise more corn to feed more hogs, to buy more land, to raise more corn, to feed more hogs, buy more land. Ultimately, their goal is to turn the United States of America into a great big armed camp with a perpetual free fire zone. Thank you, Matt. Matt in San Francisco. Man trap? Wouldn't the moat dug around the school stop him first? Yeah. With sharks with frickin' laser beams, Matt. Yeah. Okay, there's some very angry trout. And this is why it's going to keep going. And heartbreakingly so. The White House invited Matthew McConaughey to visit because, well, he comes from Uvalde, Texas. And he has been pretty public in his sentiments. He kind of broke down today.
Welcome, Matthew and Camilla McConaughey, to the White House today to speak on an urgent issue our nation is currently facing. You may know Matthew as an actor, but more importantly, he is a father, a native of Uvalde, Texas, and a gun owner. He is here today to use his platform to call on leaders to take bipartisan action to end the senseless killing and pass reasonable gun responsibility measures that we know will save lives. Just a few minutes ago, Matthew met briefly with the president to talk about the importance of taking action, keeping our communities safe. But without further ado, I would like to bring up Matthew.
Thank you.
Here you go.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Camilla. To make the loss of these lives matter. My wife and I, Camilla, we spent most of last week on the ground with the families in Uvalde, Texas. We shared stories, tears, and memories. The common thread, independent of the anger and the confusion and the sadness, it was the same. How can these families continue to honor these deaths by keeping the dreams of these children and teachers alive? Again, how can a loss of these lives matter? So while we honor and acknowledge the victims, we need to recognize that this time, it seems that something is different. There is a sense that perhaps there's a viable path forward. Responsible parties in this debate seem to at least be committed to sitting down and having a real conversation about a new and improved path forward. A path that can bring us closer together and make us safer as a country, a path that can actually get something done this time. Camille and I came here to share my stories from my hometown, Uvalde. We came here to take meetings with elected officials on both sides of the aisle. We came here to speak to them, to speak with them, and to urge them to speak with each other, to remind and inspire.
Both sides of the aisle. Well, I understand why you do something like that, but I also understand that in talking to Republicans, he's wasting his breath. I'm sorry. I know that's a cynical thing to say, but it strikes me as being at least honest. Remember, you're probably just catching up with the podcast, but yesterday we had Marginal Trailer Queen upbraiding David Hogg for not bringing his girls to meet with him. And, of course, David Hogg is eminently more intelligent, exponentially so, than Marginal Trailer Queen. And he said, sorry, Marge, but I really don't have time to help another stupid video of yours go viral. Good on him. But who are these reachable Republicans? Anybody? Look, I want to be wrong about this. Golly Moses, I want to be wrong about this. But if there are, please, this is not rhetorical. Who are the reasonable Republicans? Tell me. Somebody go through the list of Republicans in the House and Republicans in the Senate and tell me who among them is reasonable and open to this conversation. I mean, if anything comes out of this, and that's not the way Vegas bets, but if anything comes out of this, it'll be the federal act to require purchasers of AR-15s to be 21. And then I guess we'll all say, yay, something got done. And it'll just mean that we'll go from having 18-year-olds chopping children into human ceviche to having 21-year-old white men chopping school children into human ceviche. If I'm wrong, tell me, please. Because this is one... Interestingly, Kyle Rittenhouse wasn't even 18. And he murdered two people and maimed another with a goddamn gun that was bought for him. And illegally, a straw man purchase, and held for him until he could pick it up. Young Herr Rittenhouse has, of course, been making the rounds of late in right-wing media, pissing and moaning about how he will probably never be able to find a job or some such. At one point, Kyle Rittenhouse said he was going to Texas A&M University. And Texas A&M said, like hell he is. And a spokeswoman for A&M said that young Herr Rittenhouse has not been admitted as a student this fall. So then he said, Rittenhouse said, unfortunately, the end of my high school career was robbed from me. You little fuck! I didn't have the time other students get to properly prepare for the future. And why was that? Because you got Mommy Rittenhouse to drive you to Kenosha, Wisconsin to pick up a gun that was illegally purchased for you and then slaughtered two people and maimed a third. Little Mr. Rottenhouse. I look forward to attending Blinn College District this year, a feeder school for Texas A&M. I'm excited to join Texas A&M in 2023. And then Blinn College said, Kyle Rittenhouse has applied but not yet enrolled for any classes. Maybe you should try to go to, I don't know, Patrick Henry University or Pat Robertson University. Hey, you know where they'd really love him? And with all of that Proud Boy money, maybe he's got the tuition. Jerry Falwell U. Now, I'm not saying I got any kind of inside knowledge, but we'll just pay attention to his pissing and moaning until he tweets that... That he's been accepted and is going to enroll in classes at Jerry Falwell U. Or, well, Falwell U. F-U. Of course, he's still pissing and moaning that he was engaging in self-defense when he went to the problem he created. The only reason he's walking free is because... some rotten-ass fanboy judge squirreled the trial. because freedom. Hey, we are down from $780 to $740. If we can get below four, if we can get 50 more bucks in, we won't have a $1,000 fundraising goal tomorrow, and that would be great. I'd hate to have to lock the doors of the, have the deacons lock the doors of the Cathedral of Common Sense and keep people from going pee, at least in the restrooms. And the Building and Grounds Committee hates it when I do that. Prayer meeting Wednesday. But, no, not going to, I don't want to talk about the particulars, but we're facing some real hard times here right now. Probably going to have to buy, well, I'm probably going to have to buy a new water heater. Yay! So if you'd hit the PayPal button at headon.live, that would be freaking great. Aw, says Ralphs. Poor Kyle. Not. I know. Let's go back to Matthew McConaughey for a few minutes.
Then that the American people will continue to drive forward the mission of keeping our children safe, because it's more than our right to do so. It's our responsibility to do so. I'm here today in the hopes of applying what energy, reason, and passion that I have into trying to turn this moment into a reality. Because as I said, this moment is different. We are in a window of opportunity right now that we have not been in before. A window where it seems like real change can happen. Uvalde, Texas is where I was born. It's where my mom taught kindergarten, less than a mile from Robb Elementary. Uvalde is where I learned to master a Daisy BB gun. That took 2 years before I graduated to a 410 shotgun. Uvalde is where I was taught to revere the power and the capability of the tool that we call a gun. Uvalde is where I learned responsible gun ownership. Now, Uvalde called me on May 24th when I learned the news of this devastating tragedy. I had been out of cellular range working in the studio all day when I emerged, and messages about a mass shooting in the town I was born in began flooding my inbox. In a bit of shock, I drove home, hugged my children a bit tighter and longer than the night before, and then the reality of what had happened that day in the town I was born in set in. So the next morning, Camilla, myself, and the kids, we loaded up the truck and we drove to Uvalde. And when we arrived a few hours later, I gotta tell you, even from the inside of our vehicle, you could feel the shock in the town. You could feel the pain, the denial, the disillusion, anger.
I'm going to interrupt for a moment. He said, you know, you could feel the shock was tangible, that the energy would, and I get it, but I still feel compelled to ask why. When this happens anywhere in the United States, why does anyone feel shock? The horror I get. Jesus, the agony I get. The grief that knows no depth, no breadth. That just feels like it will never, ever go away. And for some, for too many, it won't. It won't. But in this bloody country, that has been made this way by choice, why shock? Should any of us be shocked anymore when this happens, when it is happening as a function of deliberate actions of deliberate choices made by Republicans all over this country? I mean, God, if you deliberately hit your hand with a hammer, are you shocked when your hand breaks? You're hurt. But shock is well, but I understand Matthew McConaughey's doing the best he can. But even as the horror unfolded in Uvalde, were you shocked? I wasn't. Every day I get up and expect some outbreak of well-regulated militia action somewhere in this country. Because it is something that we choose. Not you, not me. But the money chooses. Who knows? Even as we speak, maybe it's happening somewhere else. Or maybe it'll be tomorrow or the next day. There are right-wing online sites that are encouraging copycat attacks even as we speak. I'm not kidding! Remember how we talked about during the 4 years of Nitwit Nero, wake up every morning and go, oh, look, we're not all dead. Made it through another day of him. Well, the nature of how I go about preparing this program is I start reading from the minute that my eyes open. And one of the things I look for every morning is, have we had another one? Because I have been conditioned to look for that. And we're all pretty well plugged in this community. And I imagine I'm not the only one that looks at things like and wonders. I'm thinking, Ron and Raleigh says, going back to Kyle Rottenhouse, young Kyle will be welcomed at Hillsdale College, known for their adherence to the teaching of somebody's Lord and Savior. Yeah, that's a possibility. I just happen to think he'd look great in a sweatshirt that says FU. Of course, it's not really called Falwell University. But, you know. Today, at the press briefing, I saw a photo of a pair of green Chuck Taylors sitting on a lap because one of the little children at Uvalde was only able to be identified by the fact that what was left of the body wearing them, well, one of the green Chuck Taylors had a heart on it. And that was the only means by which the shattered parents, victims of the Second Amendment, victims of a lawful gun owner, that little heart on those green Chuck Taylors was the only way that parents were able to find out that their baby, had been sacrificed on the altar of right-wing paranoia. Ron in Raleigh adds, I can hardly wait. As you heard, the intelligence of our lieutenant governor on display and his fervent, Mark Robinson, and his fervent desire to be governor. I can hardly wait for his candidacy for the office to start. The ads and the debate should go down in history. Mark is more intelligent than Herschel, but he's a damn sight nastier in his religious beliefs. The money's starting to roll in already. I told you, we are so screwed. Yeah. Because in the end, we're not, this country is not that different from, say, any other country that has had a religious revolution. You know, the reign of the Shah in Iran was not objected to only by people who wanted some sort of Muslim Shiite theocracy. There were a lot of people who simply wanted a revolution in Iran to get rid of autocratic rule and replace it with the democracy that had been crushed by the United States in the 1950s with the coup against Mohammad Mossadegh. But when the revolution came, the first thing the revolution did was to start eliminating those pro-democracy revolutionaries. Well, there's a theocratic revolution underway in the United States of America right now. And for the same reason that people got behind the Iranian theocratic revolution, Americans will get behind a theocratic revolution here. Because they want traditional values. Right? They want to be a God-fearing America. And so they will proudly march behind an American flag led by someone holding a Bible and a cross. And in North Carolina, Mark Robinson wants to lead that. Back to Matthew McConaughey.
Blame, sadness, loss of lives, and dreams halted. We saw ministries, we saw first responders, counselors, cooks, families trying to grieve without it being on the front page news. We met with the local funeral director and countless morticians who hadn't slept since the massacre the day before, because they'd been working 24/7 trying to handle so many bodies at once, so many little innocent bodies who had their entire lives still yet to live.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe here in Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, forever, in the universe under God, maybe we need to adopt some of that there Russian technology. Maybe we need, and hey, maybe the Republicans could scrounge up enough votes. Maybe the Democrats could get Joe and Kirsten to go along. That'd be 50, and maybe there's 10 Republicans who'd support it in the Senate. A federal body response force. No, we're not going to take away any AK-47s or AR-15s or anything. We're not going to take away any guns, because guns are more precious than children. But I did have occasion to think. This is the way my brain works. I thought about the trauma of the people. You know, it was somebody from a funeral home who first set eyes on Ramos as he went to enter Robb Elementary School. And yeah, that funeral home was going around the clock. And you know, the work of a mortician, a funeral director. Quiet on the set! Oh, wait. The work of a mortician is one of those things where you have to kind of be special. You have to be able to, I would suppose, compartmentalize yourself from your work. And I guess some cases are easier to handle than others, you know. When the 99-year-old goes to their long home, you know, people are grieving. But by the same token, it was a long life and hopefully well-lived. But holy Jesus, what's it going to do to the people who worked at the funeral home in Uvalde? Will they ever be able to get what they have seen out of their minds? You can't compartmentalize that. So no, we won't do anything about the actual guns. And yeah, hell, when it comes to Republicans, they're not going to want to give up any goddamn money for mental health. And but maybe we can have a federal Second Amendment regulated militia attack response force that comes into a town like Uvalde with some of those Russian mobile crematoria. Just shovel all the bits and pieces in and fire up the oven and maybe drive it away out into the country where the people won't notice the smell of burning flesh. Maybe do that. Maybe we can learn from Mother Russia. And in the end, it's nice and tidy, and you don't have any traumatized funeral home workers or embalmers or body handlers. And you know, the federal force will be very well trained, and they'll understand that sometimes, well, that the tree of liberty must be watered from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants, for it is its natural manure, said Tom Jefferson. The guy who kept a woman, his dead wife's half-sister, in a room without windows for years and years while he raped her over and over and over again. Maybe that's a common sense solution to our gun violence problem. Just let our little problems go up. As Shel Silverstein once said in an entirely different context, in a puff of smoke. Maybe. Think we could get common sense Republican Lisa Murkowski and common sense Republican Susan Collins on board with something like that? That's 52. We'd only need 8 more. You know, the federal mass shooting response squad, we could give them something. We could give them something like night vision goggles so that they wouldn't actually see the little children that they, pieces of little children that they were shoveling up and tossing into the into the Russian-designed and built mobile crematoria. Maybe it would just show them a graphic representation, little outlines and such, and they wouldn't actually have to see what our Second Amendment obsession had brought forth. By God, we do come up with ideas on this program, and I think we have one. And you know, it's already happening to a certain extent. I remember when the babies were little, and we had our kids printed, and we got the fingerprint cards, and Annette kept them in her little file folder in case it was ever necessary to identify them. Because, you know, that was the mid to late 90s, and shit, Oklahoma City happened in 1995, and well, We've got DNA technology now. It's really accessible. Maybe we could make it so the parents don't even have to identify the little pieces of their children. And I'm proud to live in America, where at least I know I'm free. Yeah.
Matt is there that we met two of the grieving parents, Ryan and Jessica Ramirez. Their 10-year-old daughter, Alethea. She was one of the 19 children that were killed the day before. Now, Alethea, her dream was to go to art school in Paris and one day share her art with the world. Ryan and Jessica were eager to share Alethea's art with us and said if we could share it, that somehow, maybe that would make Alethea smile in heaven. They told us that showing someone else Alethea's art would in some way keep her alive. Now, this particular drawing is a self-portrait, all right, of Alethea drawing with her friend in heaven looking down on her, drawing the very same picture. Her mother said of this drawing, she said, you know, we never really talked to her about heaven before, but somehow she knew. Alethea.
Poor Matthew McConaughey. Honey, Republicans don't care. They are, and we know because, you know, Louis Asparagus Gohmert threw a fit about it. We had the story yesterday. Not to get too Shakespearean, but methinks he doth protest too much. Louis was saying, what do you think we are, monsters? No, you bloodthirsty fuck. We don't think you're monsters. We goddamn know you're monsters. We know that if it was your children, you would still put that anachronism from the late 18th century ahead of them. I mean, can you imagine what a conversation in a Republican household must be like? Now, baby, someday when you're at school, and you know how you go through those active shooter drills. Well, I want you to follow directions because I want you to have the best chance of survival when it comes to your school. But honey, mommy and daddy just love you to pieces. You know that. You're our little pumpkin. But baby doll, if you happen to be one of the ones that the shooter gets, I just need you to understand you're going to go straight to heaven, and up in heaven you can have all the ice cream you ever wanted, and we're going to be so proud of you down here because, well, honey, the Second Amendment that allows pasty-faced, doughy, old, paranoid white conservatives to own all the guns they want, honey, that's so much more important than your little life. And I hope you understand that. Because if pasty-faced, doughy, old white people, mostly men, paranoid, if they can't buy all the guns they want, then nobody in America, not even you, Sugar Pie, are free. And freedom is the most important thing in the world, honey bunch. Yes, Daddy. Now go say your prayers and pray to sweet baby Jesus that the shooter doesn't come to your school, but tell him you're going to be awful glad to see him if he does. Yes, Daddy.
We need a waiting period for those rifles. We need red flag laws and consequences for those who abuse them. These are reasonable, practical, tactical regulations. to our nation, states, communities, schools, and homes. Responsible gun owners.
You know, we don't even need the clip to hear Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America and junior senator from Texas, say, well, you know, Matthew McConaughey is one of those liberal elites from Hollywood. And he doesn't understand Texas values because he's been away from Texans too long. Texans love our guns more than we love our children.
Owners are fed up with the Second Amendment being abused and hijacked by some deranged individuals. These regulations are not a step back. They're a step forward for a civil society and the Second Amendment. Look, is this a cure-all? Hell no. But people are hurting. Families are, parents are. And look, is as divided as our country is, this gun responsibility issue is one that we agree on more than we don't. It really is. Look, this should be a nonpartisan issue. This should not be a partisan issue. There is not a Democratic or Republican value in one single act of these shooters. It's not. But people in power have failed to act. So we're asking you, and I'm asking you, will you please ask yourselves, can both sides rise above? Can both sides see beyond the political problem at hand and admit that we have a life preservation problem on our hands? So we got a chance right now to reach for and to grasp a higher ground above our political affiliations. A chance to make a choice that does more than protect your party. A chance to make a choice that protects our country now and for the next generation. We got to take a sober, humble, and honest look in the mirror and rebrand ourselves based on what we truly value. What we truly value. We got to get some real courage and honor our immortal obligations instead of our party affiliations. Enough with the counterpunching. Enough of the invalidation of the other side. Let's come to the common table that represents the American people. Find a middle ground, the place where most of us Americans live anyway, especially on this issue. Because I promise you, America, you and me, we are not as divided as we were being told we are. No. How about we get inspired? Give ourselves just cause to revere our future again. Maybe set an example for our children. Give us reason to tell them, hey, listen and watch these men and women. These are great American leaders right here. Hope you grow up to be like them.
Pretty sure he's not pointing at Ted Cruz.
We can't truly be leaders if we're only living for re-election. Let's be knowledgeable and wise and act on what we truly believe. Again, we got to look in the mirror, lead with humility, and acknowledge the values that are inherent to, but also above, politics. We got to make choices, make stands, embrace new ideas, and preserve the traditions that can create true, true progress for the next generation. With real leadership, let's start giving us, all of us with real leadership, let's start giving all of us good reason to believe that the American dream is not an illusion. So where do we start? We start by making the right choices on the issue that is in front of us today. We start by making laws that say,
you know, Ralph's just said, I'm really sorry, Matthew, but the rebukes don't want to get past the guns, and they don't. They just don't. I know this is hard, but they don't. But still, at least he's trying to lay out a roadmap.
Even innocent lives and don't infringe on our Second Amendment rights. We start right now by voting to pass policies that can keep us from having as many Columbine, Sandy Hooks, Parklands, Las Vegas's, Buffaloes, and Uvaldes from here on. We start by giving Alethea a chance to be spoiled by her dad.
Oh, Jesus.
We start by giving Maytay a chance to become a marine biologist. Start by giving Ellie a chance to read her Bible verse at the Wednesday night service. Start by giving Irma and Joe a chance to finish painting their house. Maybe retire, get that food truck.
They were
Start by giving
together.
McKenna, Layla, Miranda, Nevaeh, Jose, Javier, Tesro, Helio, Eliana, Annabelle, Jackie, Azuya, JC, Jayla, Ava, Amory, and Lexi. We start by giving all of them our promise that their dreams are not going to be forgotten. We start by making the loss of these lives matter.
Oh, that must have been Peter Ducey. Are you grandstanding? Oh, oh, oh. The shitbirds of the right wing of the White House press corps.
I know that the president has an event right after.
Yeah. Corinne Jean-Pierre is doing a great job. But for the first big issue after she takes the job, oh my God. And there's another story I wanted to get to. Yeah, you're right. Arnold P.A. says, wow, for an actor, he seems really pissed. He does. Because that ain't acting. The countdown, of course, is on to the primetime premiere of the January 6th hearings this Thursday evening at 8. We'll be running it live here. They've got no small number of tweets, the committee does. And they do not paint agreed, Kevin, going back to Kyle Rottenhouse, Kevin in Massachusetts says, Rittenhouse knows he'll never have to do a hard day's work in his life. He knows damned well there's thousands of people out there that'll be more than willing to throw money at him for publicity. And it won't matter which side is in power, he'll be in demand, and he fucking knows it. He epitomizes right-wing grievance. Besides, I'm sure most of the words coming out of his mouth are straight from the top on Fox. He knows goddamn well what he did with felonious malice aforethought. He ought never live a moment as a free man for the rest of his days. Oh, well. Oh, well. But yeah, Kevin, you're right. But anyway, they've got a bunch of tweets. Maddie Cawthorn. This is why I am objecting to the 2020 election results. The right to vote in a free and fair election is the cornerstone of our republic. Attempts to undermine this strike at the very heart of the representative government of, by, and for the people. I will not be silent. And then there's Clanny Oakley, Lauren Bobblehead Boobert. VP Pence needs to be Thomas Jefferson in this moment. We have your back if you've got ours. The founding fathers didn't back down when people told them what they could and could not do. With that in mind, I won't be backing down from this election integrity fight. The mayor of D.C., who is oddly granted floor privileges in the new rules package, has called in the National Guard for the election integrity rally in D.C. tomorrow and Wednesday. Where was the National Guard when Antifa and BLM terrorized the streets all summer? Which, curiously, they didn't do. There was Jim Jacket Off Jordan the night before the election, or the night before the insurrection, talking with Frau Ingram.
I always say there's a reason they, you know, wrestle the match and kick the ball off. You play the game. Shoot, if you listen to conventional wisdom, Ohio State wouldn't have showed up last Friday night. They'd have just said, oh, Clemson's got the favorite. They're going to win. They played the game and Ohio State won. So you have to have the debate tomorrow. That's what we're going to do. We're going to object to several states. We hope the senators join us in all six, but we know they're going to join us in three.
And so the states are Pennsylvania, Georgia,
Arizona.
Your colleague, yeah. Liz Cheney, who's oftentimes not been a big fan of the president, to say the least, had this to say about your plan to object. She said, by objecting to electoral slates, members are unavoidably asserting that Congress has the authority to overturn elections and overrule state and federal courts. So she's basically saying there's just no sense that Congress can overrule by itself the other two branches of government. Your response to her criticism.
Well, you framed it up in the last segment with Professor Turley, Laura, when you said, what happens when there's an end run around state legislatures? That's exactly what took place in five states. We know that happened. You had state Supreme Courts, you had governors, you had Secretary of States. In some cases, you had county clerks unilaterally changing the election law in an unconstitutional fashion because the Constitution is very clear. It's the legislature that sets the time, manner, and place of elections. So when that happens, there is only one remedy left. It is for the United States Congress to do their duty. And that's what I plan to do tomorrow, and so do several others. I think hundreds of my colleagues tomorrow. We hope it's a majority so that we can actually then have the United States Congress have the final say on this.
I mean, He admitted his participation. And then Lauren Bobblehead Boobert tied in, look, the Second Amendment. This was at 7:56 a.m., January 5th. I'm fighting with everything I have to defend our 2A rights. I'm standing strong for election integrity and objecting to the Electoral College certification. The Democrats want me gone. Donate today. Paul Gosar, the demon dentist of the desert, said, Biden should concede. I want his concession on my desk tomorrow morning. Don't make me come over there. If this was a criminal trial, there would be enough to put these fuckers away for the rest of their lives. Oh, well. So, we are trying to get below a $1,000 fundraising goal for tomorrow. I'm sorry to keep mentioning it, but $50 would make it a $990 fundraising goal. There's at least it's why things get priced 99 cents and not a dollar. It seems like, you know, a better deal. And this. I mentioned Paul Gosar, the demon dentist of the desert. He is, of course, from Arizona. More heroism among the cops, or maybe we should not call this segment, and they wonder why people call them pigs. 34-year-old Sean Bickings, maybe you've already heard this story. 34-year-old Sean Bickings from time to time bickered with his spouse. And they were bickering. A few nights ago, 28th of May, about 5 o'clock in the morning. There was video, cop video, Mrs. Bickings said to the cop that she and her husband occasionally had disagreements, but that he never became physically violent, but they were arguing. They were arguing near a bridge with a lake, and the cops were engaging in that business, and this is what they do. They'll make small talk while another cop is running their name and their ID to see if there are any extant warrants for them. And at one point, Sean Bickings said, "Am I free to go?" And they said, "Yeah." And he climbed over a fence between the boardwalk and the water of the local lake. Cop said, "You can't swim in the lake, man." And all this got recorded as one cop said to another, "How far do you think he's going to be able to swim?" Then he got out a little ways, and then he hollered to the cops, "I'm going to drown. I'm going to drown." "No, you're not," one of the officers is heard saying. And again he said, "I'm drowning and I can't make it back to the bridge's pylon." And that's when another cop said, "Okay, I'm not jumping in after you." Mrs. Bickings, who was just having an argument with her spouse, you know, spouses do argue, Mrs. Bickings said, "If you don't," said, "please, please, I'm begging you." "Save him. He's all I have." And the cop said, "Listen, if you don't calm down, I'm going to put you in my car." And she keeps begging. She yells, "No, no, no, fucking swim." And the cop says, "You know, you're not helping." And he tells her to stop talking and shushes her as they watch Sean Bickings, 34 years old, drown. It's all captured. "I'm just distraught because he's drowning right in front of you and you won't help." And then another cop, because there's lots of cops. Says, "You know, he's been under the water for 30 seconds now." Well, they pulled him from the water about 11:30 a.m. that day. Why do we have cops? Anybody want to help with that one? I mean, it's a little late for calls or anything. But it would be really helpful. Oh, by the way, the cops are on, all the cops who sat there and watched an innocent man drown and said, "I'm not going in after you." You know, they could have called the fucking rescue squad. They could have been there right quick. People who are actually paid to do that kind of thing. "I'm not going in after you." Well, all the cops that were involved in it, they're on a paid vacation. Because cop union. They're on a paid vacation while the matter is investigated. You know, I would think that having video evidence of a bunch of cops just watching an innocent man drown.
"Well, we told him he shouldn't go in the water."
Paid vacation, just laying around.
"Hey, you know what? Let's go camping."
And not a damn thing will be done to them. They'll go right on copping. Maybe after they get their guns and badges back, maybe they can, shoot an unarmed citizen. Blue Lives Matter, y'all. Yeah, I know. Lady V says, freedom's just another word for weapons you won't use. And nothing is all you're going to leave the parents. Yep. So here we are at the end of the program. I will hopefully, I'll be able to get the podcast up in enough time this evening, with any luck at all. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors this evening. Thank you, and each and every evening. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. HeadOn.live. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. Best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is at HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Oh, Lady B says, cops know there's a growing disgust among the public against them. They're angry and they don't really care anymore. That's sickening and dangerous. They watched that guy who happened to be black drown, suspended with pay for not doing their fucking job. They watched him drown, and there's nothing we can do about it. Well, as far as they were concerned, blue lives matter and black lives didn't. They're so put upon the police. I know, Lady B. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice. Now a union shop. Please stay safe. Get your second booster. I'm getting mine on the 10th. That would be Friday. Wear your mask in busy places. Maintain your social distance 15 to 20 feet. Like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And you know, for God's sakes, if somebody comes toward you saying, I don't know, congratulations on 2 years of sobriety to George Floyd, avoid that woman like the plague. Because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.